Welcome to The Workbench, where each week we take the time and make the space to build and create in our lives. I'm your host, Christina Awe, and I'm a writer, coach, and human resources professional with a deep interest in helping you find clarity, overcome obstacles, plan, and take action on your big dreams and goals. By doing this and sharing the journey, we build and create, and we inspire others to do the same. So let's get to it. In this episode, my dear friend and Workbench contributor, Lynn, and I talk about the elements of our lives that influence the building of this podcast and her build projects, including the development of her consulting business and a recent renovation. Also, a special shout out to Lynn for all the walking, talking, support, and our long friendship. Ever grateful. We had such a good time putting this episode together, and we hope you enjoyed as well. Thanks for listening. Okay, we are recording. Today is Sunday, June 2nd, and I'm sitting with Lynn in her beautiful workspace. All right, Lynn, so you want to start by asking me the questions? Do you want to do three questions each or back and forth? How would you like to
do it? I think it might be interesting to do a back and forth.
Okay.
But we can see how this plays out. This is kind of our test drive right now. And I have a question for you.
Okay.
So if you want me to start.
Yeah.
So this goes to our history together, and both of us have an infatuation with thoughts and words, and our favorite podcast of late, where they talk a lot about words and finding the perfect word. And if you could tell me what your perfect word is.
Oh, wow.
That defines you and why.
My perfect word that defines me and why. Well, we were just sitting up on your beautiful deck looking out at the Pacific Ocean on this overcast day in June, and we talked about how several years ago we were working together and we were taking walks at lunch, and we had read Liz Gilbert's book, Eat, Pray, Love, and how she had talked about how everyone has a word that defines them. And we, at this was years ago, maybe close to 10 years ago, and build was the word that came to mind for both of us, for me. And you called me build girl, and I don't mind that term at all.
And I
think it's appropriate, and I think it's true. And I think when I look back at all of the things that have interested me in my life, it is about building upon those ideas, taking ideas and then building upon them to make the changes in my life that I want to make. And there is probably no moment in the day that I'm not seeking to improve something, and I enjoy it. It's not because I don't like myself or feel like I'm not good enough. It's more, I'm interested in how I can take the next step. So build would be the word that really resonates.
And how interesting is that? And this was such a leading question that I asked you, right?
Because I
already knew this about you because I know you so well. But how interesting is it that this word that defines you so well and how that relates to what you're trying to build right now with this podcast and what you call this podcast?
Yeah.
Which is the Workbench.
The Workbench, yeah, which came from another inspiration of mine, Michael Hyatt, who had written in a blog post, again, maybe five or 6 years ago. He was talking about his blog as being a workbench for his ideas, and that really resonated with me. And you know, again, up on the roof a few minutes ago, we were talking about how it's been really difficult for me to package this or put into words what this is about, but it's really always about the build. And so this is taking months to actually get to the heart of the matter.
Years, maybe.
Yeah. To understand myself and then to understand what this is about. And it's really about taking all of the ideas. When you build something, you're taking ideas and action, and it's putting them together. And so nice question.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. And just to talk about the significance for me of words and why sometimes we'll get so stuck in a conversation on a word, because there's so much behind that word, and that it is important for people to get a relationship with words, because words are about language and communication and action and all that relates to that. And an interesting concept for, I think, everybody to ponder about which words you identify and what's behind all of that.
Yeah, and how it influences your behavior.
Absolutely.
Even from, like, one example, when we were really struggling financially, I'd read something, I think, in Susie Orman about how if you frame your thoughts as, I'm so broke,
yeah,
you're broke. But if you frame it more in, like, I don't have the money for this right now, or I'm struggling with a certain element of my finances, it changes the way you think about things. And so you're less about a poverty mentality and more about how do you find a solution to that. And that was, I think about that example often. It really shaped my own thinking about the importance of words and why words matter.
Exactly. So. And it's like Tim Ferriss had said in our favorite podcast with Jim Collins, that language and words give you a context for thinking. Mm-hmm. And thinking is really who we are, right? Without our thoughts and everything that's spinning around in our brains, it's so much a part of who we are. So getting that clarity about words and what those words mean to you, I think is super interesting.
It is, and I think if you can... There's a lot of noise out there and inside, right? So there's all the stuff that's coming at you constantly from a media standpoint or a family standpoint or just, you know, external sources. And then there's all of the stuff that you carry with you from your experiences and from your family and things that you project from within. And I think when you start to dig in and spend some time thinking about it, it can help you get clear and push aside some of that noise so that you can evolve it more into who you want to be. And so I think that's why we like talking about it so much. It really helps us build to our next step or get to the next step in the problems we're facing or challenges we're trying to overcome. So.
Yeah, and that's a good point you bring up, that we like talking about stuff so much in this concept of podcasts and people wanting to build podcasts and listen to podcasts. What's behind that? It's this integration of words and ideas and what comes from all that and the value and the fun and all of that.
Yeah. All right. So I have a question for you.
Okay.
What's the latest mantra or idea that's been influencing you or making an impact on your thinking lately?
The latest mantra.
Or idea.
Okay. This probably goes back to what the word that I identify with, which is curiosity is maybe a limiting for me. It's more about keeping a question mark in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's been with me for a long time, but it's probably here right now too, and probably the strongest is to keep that curiosity alongside that question mark. I think
so. You're defining those differently, it sounds like.
I feel like curiosity doesn't say it well enough.
Justify or
it's not just being curious. It's got to be a little bit more action oriented.
Yeah.
So being curious is one thing, but then really keeping that question mark in your head to me speaks to an action, which
and skepticism comes
yes,
to mind, but
but
I don't know. I get a negative connotation with skepticism.
I think a lot of people do, and I love that word, but that may be why I don't use that word, because I think it's a healthy, positive word.
Yeah.
But I think people do hear it from a negative sort of viewpoint, and so I don't necessarily like to use that word, but that is... It's not that you have to doubt everything or hold everything as not right or unreal when you first hear it. I think you can see the beauty in it and give it some validity from the get point, right from the start.
Yeah.
But I think
critical thinking, is that, would that be more... I'm in love with that idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's, I mean, because it allows you to... It allows you to have the curiosity and then whatever you uncover through your curiosity, kind of look at through different lenses to see, you know, test theories, test assumptions, test whatever idea it is or
Sure. And I, yeah, there's all these like catchphrases right now, right? And so critical thinking is definitely one of them. It's a reminder for me when you're responding to something or looking at something to take that pause, to take the step back, to understand what your life experience is bringing to the table, what your feelings might be, all of that, and to keep that awareness or that question mark in your head as you're experiencing things. It's ultimately about self-awareness and clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, my brain, my sense of self likes to be in that space. So my next question for you is I'll just say it. So tell me what your favorite movie is.
Oh gosh.
And why?
Okay. Well, I guess the first one that came to mind was Moonstruck.
I love that movie.
It's so good.
It's such a good
There's
movie.
So much that's good about that
What do you love about that movie?
You know, the messiness of a family relationship, the messiness of love, the unexpected twists and turns, you know. I mean, I think that was the first thing that came to mind. I really loved Steel Magnolias when it came out, and that's another favorite. And then I guess the third one, which you'll laugh at, is Roadhouse.
Oh, cool. Because right,
yeah, our boyfriend, Sam Elliott, said
right,
it.
Right, right, right. And why
sick
not?
Of watching him.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Right on.
Yeah, those are the...
So what would you say is the theme between... Because you have three favorites. What is there an overarching theme there about those?
You know, I think it really comes back to... I think it comes back to the people interests that I have. There's a lot of interaction that goes on in all of those that speaks to our humanity and how we navigate things and the messiness of how life can go. And so that's what comes to mind initially. I don't know if that's true, but just in this kind of unexpected question, that's what I would say. I mean, you know, I went to college and picked anthropology as a major, and I really, out of the whole list of majors, that was the most interesting to me. And I literally went down the list with my finger, and that's what I landed on because it seemed the most interesting. And that's really how I make my decision, made all the big decisions in my life, is what is really interesting to me. And so I didn't use data. I didn't use a pro-con list necessarily. I mean, I did a light version maybe of that. But all of my big choices have been based on what is interesting to me. And so to get back to your question, it's the people relationships, and I'm fascinated by how that plays out.
Yeah, and I again, because I know you so well, I have these leading questions, but I see this as this lens through which you view reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to ask you, well, tell me about your beginning with your career, and you brought up that you got your degree in anthropology, which is so fitting and so true to who you are.
Yeah.
as a presence on the planet right now, and your ability to look at humanity and understand them and ask the questions and to help people to build whatever it is that they're wanting to build based on that knowledge. And where did you go? But let's talk about your background now.
Yeah.
Where did you go after that?
Well, back to the anthropology. So when I'm thinking now, you know, I got so many questions and interviews throughout my career, you know, or these little side jokes like, oh, anthropology, that did you a lot of good. And actually, I would laugh with whomever was interviewing me and say, well, actually, anthropology is the study of people and culture, and I found it extremely useful in every position that I've used. And so, yeah, I didn't go into anthropology necessarily as an academic. I didn't make a career out of it, but I used it for every single position.
It's been your foundation.
It's been my foundation, and I was already pretty open and accepting of people, but this opened my mind even more. And that those were formative years. So from, you know, 18 to 22, when you're in college or whatever it is, when you're still young, I mean, that's what I was learning about people,
the bush people in Africa and how they speak with clicks. And I was learning about the Middle East and I was learning about the South Pacific. And so that fed and interested me. And so then, you know, I'm also a big reader. So I read widely and I'm just always fascinated with that. So that informed a lot of my next steps. And then being in the restaurant business, which is where I could actually make a living, you're dealing with all sorts of people all the time. You're dealing with them in the front of the house with customers. You're dealing with the staff of the restaurant and in
the kitchen. Tell me about your life in the restaurant business. How did you get into that?
Well, I started when I was probably 15 and I worked at a pizza parlor in my hometown of Saranac Lake. And I had a really great first boss. His name was Mike Simpson, and he made pizza dough from scratch, really good sauce, really good dough. And I actually started by cleaning the pizza parlor and in the adjacent bar. So that was my first job. And then I got into actually cooking and I liked it.
And it took you to a place where after you got your degree in anthropology, you decided you wanted to up your knowledge a bit with cooking.
Yep. So I'd had the job at the pizza parlor. And then, you know, of course, as a young person, that's the easiest place to get jobs is restaurants. And also both my grandma and my mom, we were in the kitchen a lot together. And so I learned a lot about baking, and there was just something about the conviviality of a kitchen. And it's also, you know, I like to work and be in motion. And so all of that together kind of led me to cooking and restaurants as a career. And so I spent maybe 6 or 8 months, in the Finger Lakes area after graduating college, trying to figure out what to do. I was bartending and cooking and really was coming up, you know, with no good options. And I had this interest in culinary arts. And so I applied to the Culinary Institute of America. And again, I didn't really have a big plan. I just thought, oh, I want to do this. So I applied and I got in and then I went. And that was probably the first time when I really started feeling like I'd come home to something. And I loved the classwork. I loved the fact that in class, we were actually like every day in our skills class would go in and dice onions and carrots and celery and make mirepoix for the soups and stocks. And we learned like the basics, and we weren't sitting in a classroom being taught. We were actually learning by doing. And so that was cool. Huge for me.
And so this was another layer in your foundation to get the skills, but then you were also really starting to build at that point because you were creating.
I was creating, yeah. and I really felt like I was in the right place for me. I felt again at home in this way that I hadn't felt in college. I mean, I enjoyed the anthropology and it was a real foundation for me. But in searching out what the job opportunities were with that, there wasn't any clear path.
Right.
This, there was a clear path. And so I spent 2 years at this school and got my associate's degree. So I got my bachelor's and then I got an associate's. And about a week after I graduated, I ended up in San Francisco. And I'd been intending to move to Florida with some friends, and I had a job down there. But one morning I woke up in this panic and I thought, I cannot move to Florida. It's just not the right thing. And so I called up my parents and I said, you know, I know I have this plan, but I can't go through with it. I need to go to San Francisco. And they were awesome. They said, thank God you're not going to Florida. How can we help?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. They were just as relieved as I was because they felt like it was not the right path. So I made this decision.
How profound, like, though, that your parents were able to be in this space where they didn't try to influence you, but allowed you to come to this on your own.
Yeah.
That they were so relieved, but you didn't necessarily know that
I was
they didn't
so
want
surprised.
You doing that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So they said, here's how we can help. We want to help. Here's how we can help. And I said, all right. And I knew some people were going out to San Francisco, but I had no real grounding out there. So I got on a plane a week after graduation. It was right after Thanksgiving. I had 2 suitcases. And I landed in San Francisco, and my cousins, John and Marie, had bought me a night at the Park 55, which was this nice hotel right downtown in Union Square. And so I walked in and stayed in this beautiful room in San Francisco my first night with a bottle of wine, and you know, it was pretty amazing. And then I had to stay there a couple more nights because I had to figure out where I was gonna go. So I ended up figuring that out. They had these rooming houses at the time where you could rent a room, and there was like a shower down the hall, and it was safe and everything. Right. But it was transitory living. And then I would just walk the streets looking for an apartment and looking for a job. So
fantastic. So yeah. You're living in a area of the unknown. Yeah. Super risky, challenging, yeah. Brave. I mean, that's fantastic.
And it's funny because later on some people said, well, that was really bold. And I thought it was the only thing I could do. Like, there was no question in my mind. I woke up. I needed to do it. I was going to do it no matter what. I luckily had some support. And then, you know, it was a good time to look for jobs in San Francisco. So I got a job within a couple days at a restaurant in North Beach. And that was a great restaurant to start out with. I hated it. It was hard. I was really green. It was difficult. But it was a great foundation for me and to get into San Francisco and to meet some people. So,
fantastic. As I'm listening to you tell this story, I think about the way that sometimes I've observed you in the time that I've known you and how you step into big things and,
Yeah, to do that. Yeah, I can't seem to help it.
Yeah, and how that is part of the build process for you is that you do take on pretty big things, which requires a rather large, intense step, right? Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about how this latest part of your life and this foundation you've built, and understanding who you were and how you approach things, and then this next big step that I observed you take.
With going back to school for my master's.
And if you have any transition you want to talk about prior to that.
Well, I have to say, like, getting back to San Francisco, that was such a big step for me, and I'm so grateful that I had the courage to do that, and that actually gave me courage to do other things after that I might not have had courage mm-hmm. to do if I hadn't done that. Because it gave me kind of, when I realized that was kind of ballsy, I was like, oh, okay. So I'm not a risk taker from a jumping out of an airplane standpoint, but I am a risk taker for some big life decision standpoint. And so that gives you a baseline of courage to take the next step because sure. I landed on my feet.
So maybe necessary for you to take some of those other steps that maybe the steps you took later on might not have happened if you hadn't taken those first steps. Yeah.
And it really was about listening to that voice, I guess, listening to that voice inside me that said, you will not have the life you want if you move to Florida. And it was actually in my head, it was like, you will die if you go to Florida, which isn't true. I wouldn't have died if I went to Florida. Right. I could have found a way to San Francisco, but I knew that I might get stuck. And so there was this voice that could not be silenced in me that said, you have to do something else, change the plan.
Yeah.
And I listened to that. And so that, I guess, is the key to what has led me to these different things. In my bio, in my history, I have to say, like, I met the man that I've now been married to for 20 years. I met the third or fourth day in San Francisco. And so that, and that's been life changing.
Right.
And you know, we've been on this journey together for a while now.
Right.
And there would have been a different outcome, which might have been also good, but I'm so grateful that this was a step I took.
Right.
After San Francisco, we moved around a bit. And when when we had our son Alex in 2002, he's 16 now, and he's getting ready to go out in the world himself, which is exciting for him and for us. And but when he was 10, I decided to go back to school. And I had been, you know, we had been talking, I think, in the library in mm-hmm. Encinitas about how we were thinking of things that we wanted to do. And I just had this feeling that I wanted to go back and get my master's degree, but I didn't know in what. And I knew that I wasn't doing enough in my life or in my career, and I wanted more. And so that's when I went back to USD and got my master's in executive leadership, which was really pivotal because it gave me a lot of the new understanding of who I helped me build into who I am and who I want to be in this next segment of my career in life. So
I see that time as this, who you've become, and that you took all the pieces and you incorporated them into this Christina that you are today, and that was a huge stepping stone for you when you went through that process and you jumped off into it.
Yeah.
In a pretty dramatic way.
Yeah.
But all those other pieces got sort of glued together during that time. Everything that you brought with you in terms of your bachelor's and the baking and the mothering,
yeah,
and all of that came together during this time.
That was such, it was like, you know, think of it in terms of burning down my house or having it be like, I don't know if an earthquake or volcano is a better analogy, because there was so much going on. There was, again, that kind of burning feeling inside, like something has got to change. I cannot stay where I am right now in this situation. I need to be doing more. I have more to give. It's really about, I have more to give, and I need to make sure it gets out there. And I don't know how that ends up manifesting, you know, in the long term. But I guess what's interesting about that is, even in all the uncertainty, there was still this knowledge that something had to change. And so going back to school was a big part of it, and I didn't know how I was going to make that happen. And then the job I was in was really kind of tearing me apart too, because my values and ideals were not in alignment with theirs, and it was impacting me every day. And it got to the point where I had to leave, and I didn't have a backup plan, and we didn't really have a lot of runway at that point. And so it created a lot of problems in our marriage and in just navigating life. It was so stressful. And at the same time, I knew that I couldn't not go forward. So there was a lot of dissonance and a lot of discomfort on a lot of levels, but getting through that and being at the end of that, you know, something new has been born, and I feel pretty confident with the fact that of who I am and how to move forward.
And I find this such an interesting subject, this concept of building something big, and that we maybe have some preconceived ideas of how things should play out, and that it often is so messy. And so I don't like to use the word destructive, but sometimes you do have to tear things down,
yeah,
in order to build something new, knowing that there's all this foundation that does exist that you are building upon, but there is maybe some clutter there that you need to take out and destroy in order to get to that next place, and to allow yourself to get a little messy during that build, and to have some, what's the word, trust in the process. And with that can be a whole other subject, talking about trust, but that informed trust, or the inner trust, the whatever it is,
yeah,
to allow yourself to be brave enough to get messy and go through that,
yeah,
and watch something get born or bloom out of that clutter and that chaos. I don't know that I've ever seen a build, and I'm sure they exist, where there isn't some of that.
Yeah. Two things come to mind while you're saying that. And the first one is, I wrote, you know, back in 2012, maybe 2013, I wrote on this little tiny scrap of paper, "Have faith." And I kept it. I have kept it. I have it posted in front of my computer at home in my little writing room there. "Have faith." It's on this messy, crappy piece of paper. And I had to have faith that, you know.
So can I, sorry to interrupt you,
yeah,
again, but it's so interesting to me because you and I have such this deep connection. But I've carried around with me this, I had these little magnets that had words on them. And one day I looked down and there was the magnet that said trust on it. This has got to be like 15 years ago. And that I relate to what you're saying about your faith word, because for me it was trust, and big word in my world. But I've carried that around with me, and it's been kind of central to my foundation in the decision making that I make.
It's amazing when you can find something like that or hold on to something like that in the middle of a big change, because I think it's, again, with the noise, there's all these influences. My husband, Tim, was so frustrated with the situation at the time, and I was too. And at the same time, I knew I had enough presence of mind to know that something good was going to come out of it. I believed in myself enough. And because I'd made big jumps before, and then this was another really big jump, but our whole family was riding on it too. And that was very difficult.
And says something to the foundation that you must have created within your family for you guys to be able to weather this. It wasn't always clean and beautiful, but you guys did weather it and you've come out the other side.
Yeah, it was touch and go for a while. I mean, mm-hmm. we've had conversations. Mm-hmm. There were some big questions for a while, mm-hmm. and you know, I think
it was messy.
That's the thing about marriage that's so like, you don't realize when you get married how hard it can be at times to have faith in that, in the you know, be encircled in the arms of that when you're at such odds with yourself. Really, I mean, I was at odds with myself. I was really trying to figure out, you know. Like, I tore the walls down. I tore it down to the studs, basically, is how I see it when I envision it. And it didn't start that way. It just started with this question of, I want to go back to school. And then that opened up all of these other questions I had and impacted the way I navigated my relationships. And, you know, I ended a long friendship. You know, to say that more appropriately, one of the longest friendships in my life did end. If it's actually ended, who knows? We may at some time pick that back up, but we had to each step away from the relationship because we both were different, or I knew I was different and couldn't be the same person anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's where the mess came in, and there's constant work, but a lot of the big work has, you know, been done. A lot of the foundation has been put back together. So
So here you sit now, this
2019.
This,
it took a while.
This expert in leadership and humanity and organizational development, and you know who you were and who you've become, and it's just, you know, it's interesting to reflect back on that journey. And how necessary probably most of it was to get to this place.
Yeah, I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful, you know, it's like any big pain you go through, you hate it when you're in it. And then you don't know how you could exist without having been through it. So it's this weird dynamic in your mind, because you don't want to be in pain when you're in it. But then you're grateful for it later. And that's true for losing someone you love or any kind of big you know, shattering feeling that you endure. And we all go through it at some point. We all have these things that we have to go through. And I guess the have faith is the, you know, find that one thing that can remind you in the moment, you know, to put the next foot down and keep just taking the next step, because you end up getting to where you want to be if you do that.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting also to remember these stories that we have in our head about it's got to be clean and pretty and potentially easy. And if it's not, that we step into judgment of it and maybe step away from whatever it is that we're doing, and to understand that it isn't always clean and pretty and easy, and that to not define that as either good or bad, but to have some faith in that process and the value that comes, the growth that comes from allowing yourself to step through some of that living.
Yeah, and I guess I think that's so important now, because everything we see that's from a media standpoint is very well produced. And so, you know, like your experience at Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of thing where, you know, we hear that on NPR on whatever Saturday or Sunday morning, but you were actually there at the taping, and they go and redo things. Or if you think about you know, putting together a show or a movie, like, that's why they do take after take after take. They are refining it, but we don't see that process. And even with us in the podcast, trying to figure out how to put together the recordings in a way that listeners are going to want to hear, like, we've had some false starts, but they're not really false starts. You're trying to figure out what works and what flows and how to make it, how we can make it our own. And so when you think about how little of the process we see, it's not a true reflection of how things go. And so when you forget that, you're holding yourself up to the standard that's not realistic.
I think you bring up such a good, important point right now, that we have almost conditioned ourselves to look at that end result and to not see the process. And you brought up me seeing this taping of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and to see the process that they go through to then provide this end product that we all love to listen to. I was as enthralled with that process and seeing that as I am with the end product. Yeah. And there is something to that. I was going through this remodel of my place, and I was talking to my contractor the other day, and he said, well, one of the challenges that we run up against is we've got the homeowners looking at every single action along the way and asking us about us and saying it, no, that's not right, because the steps don't look like what it is that they want to see at the end.
Yeah.
And how challenging that is for him. And my reply was, well, I really love watching the you guys put down the glue first that I'm never gonna see, but I just love knowing that that glue is under there. That's where my brain goes.
Yeah.
And to almost get people engaged in that process that is leading to that end product, and that end product all of a sudden has so much more beauty and value to it because you understand what it took.
What went into
to build it, as opposed to just seeing that end product. That's been really eye-opening for me. And I am more enthralled with that than ever in my understanding of that.
And I guess that's where, like, maybe that's why I felt so strongly about calling this the workbench. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, and I envision the two workbenches that I envision is one, like when I was a pastry chef, I loved having this big long table with my flour and vanilla and the bowls or the dough out on it. Like, a table that's in use like that is beautiful to me. And then I was making jewelry for a while, and same thing. I took a picture. I have a picture of my workspace, and I have, you know, there's all of these things that are there that I can use to create or build something, and then I have a tangible product at the end. And I think that is the coolest thing to look at.
It's like, I can't get enough of it. And I'll probably pronounce this wrong, but it's your mise en place.
Yeah,
right?
Mise en place. Yeah, to create.
You taught me that, and it gave me a concept of what all that is.
Yeah,
that you have to have all of that together, and it itself is not the end product, but it's part of the end product.
And it streamlines the process of making it. And my grandma actually taught me that before I went to culinary school. She said, she would say, okay, well, we want to get all the ingredients out so that we have them at the ready.
Yeah.
So that we can make our cake or whatever. And I love that. I still to this day use that for everything I do. And it's so
key.
Useful.
It's key to that build, right? I mean, there's all these messy parts and the stepping off into it and the risk. But then there's all these planning parts of the build where that kind of comes into play.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have that name for it. Have your mise en place, which also sounds really good.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really what, you know, the genesis of, I guess that's how this has come together. And I'm really looking forward to taking this podcast and the workbench and the writing that goes along with it and taking the journey and bringing it to as many people as are interested and wanting to create something in their own lives and helping them. You know, I see it as a place for them to get some strength when they need it, or ideas when they need it, or stories to help them persevere. Love to see this grow into a community of people who share what mm-hmm. they're working on and getting tips from each other. So that's my vision, and I'm just really fantastic. Having a lot of fun doing it and having the conversations with you and building it together. So
right, yeah, fantastic. I was thinking when you were talking about your childhood and the things that have kind of shaped you and brought you to where you are. And I was reflecting back on my childhood, and I had a grandmother who was a business owner and an entrepreneur, and she was my inspiration to play bank as a child.
I love that you played bank.
Right?
That's
becomes,
so you.
Becomes the accountant. And then I had my mom, who was a teacher and also very artsy, and then went on to get her therapist license. And so there she brings in, you know, this yeah. people orientation, which I'm also very in awe of and struck by. And then my dad.
I was going to say your dad, too.
The architect, yeah. right, yeah. and artist, both of them very artistic in his concepts of beauty and the structural beauty behind things, the structural integrity, yeah. and how all of that has shaped my thinking and how important it is for us to reflect back on what shapes who we are and our thinking and what we get joy from and what we want to develop or possibly recover from or right. heal from,
yeah.
and that is important knowledge to have in any build process, I think.
I would agree. It's we are shaped by our own experiences, but all of the other things that you mentioned, and our education, our work experience, and then what do we take with us that we want to keep, and what do we want to be very clear about saying goodbye to or letting go? And a lot of that is family stuff that, you know, had shaped us early, and it's hard to get to that sometimes, or remember, or even, you know, see how a behavior is impacting us or preventing us from moving forward.
Sure.
So I think doing the work, a little bit of the work whenever possible, on a regular basis to sort that out is really important to the, to allowing us to actually take the steps forward versus staying stuck in old patterns. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm going to ask a follow-up question. So tell me a little bit about what you do and how you got to where you are now professionally, because a lot of this has been part of our ongoing conversation for years. And I think we both bring different things to the table, and you've really created a business for yourself. And I think it'd be interesting to hear the evolution of that.
Sure. Okay, so what do I do? So currently I have my own business, and I think if I had to give myself a label, which that can be a whole other conversation in my relationship with labels.
Lynn doesn't like boxes.
I don't, unless they're really pretty. I'm a fractional controller, and a fractional controller is that I, as a consultant, offer up accounting services at somewhat of a controller / CFO level to small businesses for now in the San Diego area. There's definitely a need for that for smaller companies that can't necessarily afford to have a full-time person in there, but still want the expertise that comes from somebody at that level. And it's kept me busy for years now. It's fun. I get to learn all kinds of great things and meet a lot of interesting people and provide value on a constant basis to companies that are wanting to build, take it to the next level, understand where they're going. It's been a great ride. And this evolved from, so I graduated with my degree in accounting, took the CPA, was working for a big one, what they called the big eight accounting firms back in the day, and then started to have kids. And so it's been a evolution of working for companies, working in my own space, and coming, I would say maybe about 10 years ago, to this place now where I'm truly on my own and have a viable business. And it's been organic in that I'm always busy, and that's been fun as well.
When I think about your career and what, you know, you've had a really good mix of big company experience, startup experience, you've figured out how to have your own business as a sole proprietor and yet still partner with people who have of the same caliber as you in terms of your expertise and knowledge. And you basically are not having to market yourself right now. You're getting clients, you're turning people away constantly. And I think you've really found the niche that works for you. And tell me a little bit more about how you like to, what you find most rewarding about the consulting experience with your clients. I mean, I know what I think it is, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
What I find most rewarding
about it, yeah.
So, let's see. There's probably a couple things. Number one that I really like is being able to step into a company and see how they're doing things from the accounting standpoint, and clean that up. I love the cleanup. Okay, this is what it looks like right now. Let's get this organized. Let's get a process together. Let's get this accounting process more compact and providing you with the value that you really need to get from an accounting process. So that I never seem to stop finding fun in. The other thing that I'm coming to lately is that I'm mostly talking to smaller companies and entrepreneurs that have these fantastic ideas and these things that they're building, but they don't necessarily have a finance background. And so I'm able to provide them with accounting knowledge that they need to have to run a business. And so I've become a coach and a teacher and a mentor in that realm that I didn't know that was going to come of this. And that's been exciting and fun. I have one client that we do accounting for dummies, and we talk to each other once a month. And we, you know, we'll just go through one of the subjects that either she finds important or that I think is important for her to know, and have been able to help her to step up her understanding of financial reports and the numbers and what that all means. And one of the things that, and this maybe relates to the first question you had asked me, that when I think about teaching these accounting concepts, which sound so dull and dry in theory, but what I find so exciting about them is that I see it all in relative terms, that no number or report or piece of information has any value when it's stuck in a box, right? And it's all relative. It's all relative to a trend or to a goal or to an action. And so teaching that to people to start seeing things from a different angle, all of a sudden accounting is not dry and dull. It's a story and something that you can then step from and achieve whatever it is you're trying to achieve because you have this newer understanding of it. And that's been fantastic.
I think what's interesting about that, what's sparking my thinking right now from this conversation is that, you know, we are in love with data. You know, there's so much that is reliant on data. And what's interesting to me about that is not data just in its own vacuum or by itself, is that it tells a story. And I think that's what you're talking about, is your numbers tell a story. And these are the stories that we need to understand to know where to take our business or where not to take our business. And so
To build whatever it is you're trying to build or to reach your goals, you know, sorry to interrupt, but when you brought up this concept of data, as I am so data driven, is to understand the data. What's the source of the data? How good is the data? Do you want to rely on this data? Do you need to manipulate this data a little bit? And taking it to that next level. And that's, I guess, where the critical thinking comes in and is so key to all this.
Yeah.
So all the data is relative to everything else around it, but it also, you need to understand what that data is. And basically, is it good data?
Yeah. one of my frustrations in my role in human resources is that a lot of what we do on the people side is really hard. Like, I don't know. We haven't figured out a good way to measure that, and it's hard. So then you start thinking, okay, well, I know that I'm making an impact on people, and that makes an impact on productivity, which makes an impact on the bottom line. But I can't point to a number, and so I'm spending a lot of time thinking about how to change that, or how to quantify that somehow, and just doing some research. I haven't come up with. I have more reading to do. I have more outreach to do. There's more that I can do and will continue to do to learn about that. But, in my more creative life, I haven't spent a lot of time in that space. And so now that I'm entering into it, it's fascinating. And it's fun because you can actually, I don't know, you can get joy of seeing where you were to where you are, mm-hmm. and know a trajectory. And that feels really good to actually quantify that. So
sure,
I'm kind of a new convert to the idea of the importance of it. I mean, I've always understood the conceptual importance of it, but how it can make a real impact on a person's behavior to make a change or to change the direction of a organization, it's incredible.
Yeah, and just a couple of thoughts that come to mind as you're saying that is, To really understand, I think, two things. Number one, that I think when it comes to people, that this is a ever-changing and fluid area, and to keep that in mind, and that it's kind of a bit of a moving target. But with that in mind, that there's statistics, right? And to really understand the numbers behind those statistics as you're gathering data and what kind of information that can give you about how people in general respond to certain things, what makes people tick, and this can be generational, this can be cultural. So you have to understand that as well when you're looking at that type of information. Mm-hmm. But it's all measurable. It's fascinating, and it can also surprise you at mm-hmm. times, because yeah. you may step into a space thinking one thing and then discover that it's absolutely the opposite of what you were thinking. So getting that balance between your thoughts and your feelings and your intuition, and balancing that up against the data
yeah.
that exists,
and not cherry picking it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And understanding that we do that. Mm-hmm. We do that as humans.
We want to support our own
yeah.
Predilections or.
And maybe sometimes, as long as you're clear about that, that's okay. Just yeah. figure out, what is your goal? What am I trying to achieve here? What's my agenda?
Yeah.
And measuring your assessment of the data with that in mind. The more that you can step back from the data and let the data understand it well enough, so then you can let it speak for itself, is pretty eye-opening mm-hmm. and exciting.
All right. You have another question for me?
I'm such a nerd. So I have one last question. I know this is just so cliche, but what are you currently reading right now, and what do you like about it?
I just started two books on writing, and one of them is by Ivan Doig, and you have to read the intro. I was thinking about you the other night, because his intro to this new edition of a book he wrote many years ago knocked me out, and I just thought of you immediately, and I thought you would love the actual, his introduction. It was 26 pages, but it was so beautiful that it made me buy the book. And
awesome.
It's pretty much a memoir of his family and their growing up in Montana, and that way of life is falling by the wayside. There's not a lot of sheep herders or people that whitewash barns, and so he was just talking about mm-hmm. his foundations in life. And so I started that, and I also started a book by Stephen King on writing, on the writing process. And so I'm reading those right now, just because, I found writing is part of what I love to do, and right. that was something that I found later in life. I had no idea or designs on that whatsoever, and fell into it through my school and classes, and it's become something that I incorporate into every day or almost every day of my life now.
But you've always been a lover of words, and and you've journaled.
Reader, huge reader.
And so that it's always been kind of a part of you. I just didn't know. You have more awareness of that now and how big a piece of that is in you.
Yeah, and it, you know, the accident of it was that I had these two instructors that liked my essays the first class that we took in our master's program, and I was one of four people that they suggested, you know, that they recommended the other classmates to read. And so that was this interesting moment where I was like, oh, okay, I think I did that well. But I didn't know, you know, I had no idea that I had done it well or that there was a talent there. And so that was a little seed that grew. And when I realized how much I enjoyed the writing process, even though it's really difficult, and it forces you to think and get clear, and it's not, like there's so many times I sit down to write that I want to go and do anything else, and I have to force myself to sit there because I know that's my brain telling me to, you know, it's distracting itself, and I don't go deep, it's preventing me from going deep. And so when I sit there, I'm able to go deeper, and that's really, I love that. And I love the result of it. I wouldn't have known any of that if I hadn't gotten that one comment from my teachers to share these essays. And so if they had picked someone else and not me, I don't know that I'd be writing like this. I might have, but I wouldn't have had the confidence to keep doing it.
Right.
So that was a huge...
It's these moments, these things that happen that can take us down paths, and having the awareness to listen to the moments.
Yeah.
Because who knows if those moments had occurred to you maybe several times earlier in your life and you didn't necessarily have the awareness to listen to them, and so they passed you by.
Yeah, it could have been a right time, right place. And so ever so grateful for that having kind of happened when it did. And then having enough experience behind me and
exactly
to kind of put it together, and then enough confidence in self to find my own style and just let that be, and then put that out in the blog, and then the feedback I got was good feedback, which also kept me going, like, okay, I think I've got something here. So I am continuing to grow that and continuing to love it. And working on the podcast has taken my energies away from it, which has been, I've had some inner conflict about that, but I will get back to it, and I'm still writing a couple times a month, so.
Right. And it's all kind of part of the process.
It's all
right
part
now.
Of it.
You're,
it's all part
you're
of it.
You're creating material to write about, I would imagine.
Yeah. So that's what I'm reading, a couple books on writing, and geeking out on that, which is fun. What about you? What are you reading right now?
You know, it's funny because when I was coming up with this question for you, I was thinking, well, what am I reading? And I like you, was an avid reader my entire childhood and first part of my adult life, was always reading. I would, you know, I'd read the cereal box on the breakfast table. Like, I just was always reading.
Drawn
and
towards
whatever
that,
was in the house, I read it. So I was reading a lot of, you know, Russian literature at the age of 10, because that's what was in our house. And as of, I would say, maybe the past 10 years, I've stepped away from fiction and just almost don't have the patience for it, which is really odd. And I've just been reading a lot of nonfiction, which may be a reflection of what's been going on in my world for the past 10 years. And of late, reading a lot of business books that are related either to management or growing companies. Mm-hmm. Just absolutely intrigued, probably because of what I do. So I'm currently reading Measure What Matters, which was the recommendation that you had given me to read that. And I had already been looking at their blog, so I loved that. And getting a lot of material out of that that I'm using in my own thinking and also in my approach with clients, and really enjoying that a lot.
I love that book, and I think our next recording session we should dig into that and talk a little bit more about what we each liked about it.
Okay.
And how it's maybe changing some of our own actions, because I think there was so much good stuff in that book. I found it fascinating. So
yeah, and I love that you and I are coming together in this concept of measuring what matters, yeah, and what we both bring to the table, which, you know, I played bank as a child. Well, I'll do an art. I did art too, and I did music and all that, but I was playing bank, and you know, you were baking, yeah, and what our both of our foundations were, and what we bring to the table, and that this book, Measure What Matters, I think brings all of that together in such a really concrete, really cool way. So yeah, I would love to talk about that all with you.
Well, this has been really fun. Really, really fun morning. So yeah. All right. Until next time.
All right.
Thank you for joining us today at the Workbench. We welcome your comments and would love to hear what you are in the process of building. Look us up at KristinaAu.com. That's KristinaAu.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, you can help us with our build by subscribing, sharing, and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. We aim to inspire and stir the pot for the next big thing you want to build or create. Until next time.